So this is a Java talk that has a complete set of lecture notes about the language Java and some of its capabilities. We find it particularly interesting for developing web applications because of its close interaction with writing user interfaces for web pages, and also with its ability to easily do distributed applications across the network. It has all of those capabilities built in fairly closely. In this class, we are not going to be doing the Java language in any kind of detail. We don't have enough time because we are going to be surveying lots of different web technologies that Professor Fox talked about in the first lecture. However, some of those technologies, like the database connection, we're going to cover the database connection that is given for Java, so it will be so you really need to have a background in sort of the Java language a little bit, enough to be able to write some simple programs. When Java got started, the first browser that did Java was called Hot Java. So some of you may have heard of that. And the original Hot Java browser was for the alpha version of the Java language. A lot of people wrote applets. It got to be popular. Then Java came out with the beta version of language, which was pretty different. That's what we've been using now for a year. And in fact, the Hot Java browser for the beta version of the language didn't come out until last summer. So it's a completely new implementation. But we haven't been having a lot of experience with that because meanwhile people have been using Netscape for their browser. I don't think this is doing the pages in quite the right order. Did it just skip one page, or did it skip more than one? Well, anyway. So Hot Java, the Hot Java browser is a complete toolkit for developing browser-style applications where you really want to be able to customize the user interface in a very flexible way. It had a lot of classes to use with Java that were very powerful for building user interfaces. Meanwhile, since Hot Java didn't come out for a while, people have been using Netscape with JavaScript to customize user interfaces. In fact, this particular interface with the frames and so on is done using JavaScript, and that's going to be the next section in the course after Java. Is going to be a section on JavaScript. I can't get this window resized. Oh well. I think most of the slideshows, except for a little bit at the bottom there. So I apologize for that. Let me try again. Oh, there we go. Can you see? down at the bottom there? Are you able to see that whole slide? Okay. I guess I can move it a little bit. Left side that you can't see, right? There, now can you see everything? Oh, but this side is different. Oh, you're getting a different picture. I can't optimize it for all the screens. Anyway, so how does Java work to provide a user interface to the World Wide Web? Well, Java is a general-purpose, object-oriented language that you can write programs in. And there is a compiler. You can write ordinary programs like C, like you would in C or C++. There is a compiler so that you compile your Java code. And what you produce are these applet codes, or so-called byte codes, which are the same for every machine that they're going to run on. The applet codes are then stored in the document space of a web server. Then anybody with a browser, such as Netscape or HotJava, can request to have one of those Java applets sent to the browser as part of their web page. The applet code then is sent to the browser just like a web server would serve up any other document to the client, like a .html file or something. However, it knows it's an applet because it has a different extension. So then there is an interpreter associated with the browser which runs the Java code on the client machine. So this enables Java to write user interfaces in which you can do mouse actions and buttons and so on, very flexibly do lots of windowing things and drawing, as well as other parts of the language, because the code can run directly at the browser and doesn't have to, you know, responses to what the user does doesn't have to be sent over the network to the web server and back, like with most HTML. So let's just take a quick glimpse at how you do that, and there is a special HTML tag that you can put on any HTML page in the web server document space, and this tag is called applet. I guess I can use the mouse here as a pointer. You can see that the name of the tag is applet. One of the things that you give is the attribute code, which tells it the name of the Java code that you want to have executed on the browser. You can also say what directory it's in, that's this code base attribute, and you can say what the width and height of the browser window that you want to show it in. So when you want to write a Java applet, you write the Java code, you compile it, you write an HTML file that refers to that applet, you put all of that in your web space, and then you can use a browser to look at it. There's actually another way to do it for debugging purposes, which is that you can compile the code and use, without using a web server, use something called the Applet Viewer to look at your Java code. So how did Java get started? I'll just say a few, I better just say a brief word about that because we don't have much time to talk about Java. But it was started by a group at Sun. They were originally working on writing a simpler version of C++ that would work as an operating system for consumer electronic boxes. And they actually developed a product called a personal digital assistant, which was a little control that you could carry around with you in your house and control all your electronics devices and your lights and so on. However, this project wasn't funded, and they went back to Sun, and by that time the World Wide Web had become very popular, and they realized that the capabilities that they had put into Java were also very suitable for use on the web. As I said before, the Hot Java browser was published, and people made free, and people used it. It became popular. Netscape then licensed Java, and finally the new version of the language, which is the version we're using now, the so-called beta version, was released in the Java development kit. Java has become fairly widely accepted, and there are many companies that have agreed to adopt or license Java and use it in their products. So, for example, Microsoft does the browser Internet Explorer, and it also does Java applets. So when we write Java programs, we'll be using the Java Development Kit, so-called JDK. Actually, I think we're going to be running version 1.0.2. There will be a Java compiler. There's Java Source that you can look at and lots of examples. The Applet Viewer for debugging, and some other tools. JDK 1.1 has come out, but it has a lot of interesting features, including some nice things for the Abstract Windowing Toolkit. But it doesn't run on all the browsers yet, so we decided not to switch to JDK 1.1 for this course. We probably won't. We're not expecting to change over probably until the summer. So, as I said, Java has been very popular, and one of the evidence of that is there have been so many books come out about Java. And I have a list of some here. This is just a few of the many that you can find if you go down to Borders or Barnes & Noble and take a look at the Java section. Let me skip over some of these and talk. The third one there, Java in a Nutshell, is one that I use quite a lot. I think it's a good reference work. It talks about more of the classes than a lot of the other books, but it doesn't give us much explanation. The Java Programming Language is an interesting book. One of the authors is James Gosling, who was the primary developer of Java. And if you want to read sort of about the language design issues, this is a really good book for that. This is similar to the original Java white paper that they wrote and that was on the web for so long, and they developed it and put it into this book. It doesn't cover all the kinds of classes there are, but it really talks a lot about the design. There's a book that was written locally, Java Primer Plus. Here's this book at the bottom, Java How to Program by Dital and Dital, is another one that I've been using. It has a lot more explanation. It starts with beginning programming concepts, so if you don't have a strong C or C++ background, this might be a good book for you. It doesn't assume that you know a lot of that stuff. And it seems to cover pretty well all the kinds of classes for windowing and networking that we will probably be wanting to do. Now, there's a series from Sunsoft Press about Java. There are 5 books in this series. I'll skip over the first 3, which I don't consider. They have some good explanations, but they don't cover all the kinds of classes that I think we would want to use. So if you wanted a really good book, I think Core Java would be good. I've used that as well, and it has some good explanations, and it's pretty good about covering everything. Graphics Java is interesting if you're really more serious about doing user interfaces and windowing. It has some new classes that weren't in the original JDK for doing more advanced windowing type stuff. And some of you who, if you were in CPS 606 last semester, that might be another thing you might want to do is take a look at some of the classes in Graphics Java to kind of expand your Java repertoire. There are things like buttons that you can put images on, and new menu bar classes, and rubber banding for selecting things on the window, and so on. me say just a word about Java compared to JavaScript. So Java is a general purpose language that you compile. JavaScript is a similar language. It doesn't have quite the same syntax and concepts that you write directly into your HTML pages. So this is language is interpreted right at the client. And it's a good thing for doing rapid prototyping of user interfaces. And I'm not going to talk more about the differences because you're going to be covering that in this class in the next section. They're both are object-oriented or object-based languages. Now, when Java was designed in the original Java white paper, a lot of the design principles or features of Java were described by James Gosling and Henry McGilson. These are the list of the main features, and let me try to go over them fairly briefly. So the first feature is that it's simple and familiar. And the reason that it's familiar is if you know C or C++, it's based on that language. A lot of the syntax is familiar, a lot of the other features. However, it is simpler than C++ because a lot of the confusing features have been taken out. Operator overloading has been taken out. There are no pointers or type coercions or multiple inheritance. In some ways, it's simpler to program in because Java has built-in mechanisms to handle memory allocation. So you don't have to do malloc to get memory whenever you need it on the fly. The memory is created for you, and then there's an automatic garbage collector which gets rid of the memory, so you don't have to worry about that when you're programming in Java. The other way in which it's simpler is that they kept the main part of the language as simple, as small as possible, so that the kernel is very small. This was a real important feature to them because, remember, they were designing for consumer appliances where you'd want to have a really small kernel. And then all the power of the language comes from all the classes which are defined. Since it's object-oriented, you can define more data structures and more functionality by providing this large library of classes. So that's where the power of the Java comes from, because of its object-oriented character. There are some 250 public classes that come with the Java language in its in the release that we're working with, and more classes are being designed, as well as what to officially go with the language, as well as what other people write. Another way in which the object-oriented nature of Java affects its use on the web is that in an object-oriented language, each programming module that you write is called a class, and in Java, they associate each one of those with a file and do the so they associate the program structure with the file structure of a web server so that it's really easy to write URLs to access Java programs. That's all sort of built into the naming structure. The next feature of Java is that it's architecture neutral. Many languages have the problem that when you use them on different machines, you have very different code generated. You have to recompile things for different machines. And Java tries to tackle this problem by having this intermediate step where you compile code, intermediate code called the bytecodes, which are the same for every machine, so that you the compilers, which are hard to write and actually which exist on lots of different platforms now, don't necessarily have to be written for as many machines as browsers are written for, that people can access Java applets from. What you have to write on all the browser machines are Java interpreters, which can interpret the bytecodes on particular machines. So they've separated that problem into those two parts. So the Java bytecodes run on a machine that's called the Java Virtual Machine, and it is fully defined. Unlike C or C++, where there's still a flavor of, in the language, there's some dependence on what machine you're running on, for example, how many bytes your integers take, and so on. This is all specified at the level of the bytecode, so that there should be not as many differences in how code runs among different machines. The other thing that, arithmetic was made uniform at the bytecode level. The other thing that was made uniform was the windowing environment, and that's called the Abstract Windowing Toolkit. So there's a part of Java which deals with writing user interfaces and doing windowing, and it has a uniform interface called the Abstract Windowing Toolkit. Then each Java interpreter will map, you know, what the Abstract Windowing Toolkit is doing with the mouse or frames on the window into what the vendor-specific environment is doing, like Macintosh Windows or Windows 95 or Unix, X Windows or something like that. I talked about the fact that Java is partly compiled and partly interpreted. I won't say more about that. It does have features built in for distributed computing over networks. So there are built-in classes for TCP/IP protocols for accessing other machines and files across the network. This is mainly a client-server model. But other models can be also accomplished. Java tries hard to be what's called robust, which is that it tries to eliminate as far as possible the kinds of runtime errors that will occur by having a fairly strict system for having to declare the types of all the variables and that there is compile time type checking. Pointer arithmetic has been eliminated. And it checks array subscripts and so on. As much checking is done as possible. So in some ways, it is more cumbersome to write a program in Java because you have to be sure and declare things and so on. It's not a rapid prototyping language. On the other hand, it's a much safer language, which is really nice if you're going to be running it on other people's machines across the web. So this is part of the security that had to be built into Java. When you think about it, it doesn't seem like a very safe thing to be able to take somebody to sit at your browser and to go out and take a program that somebody arbitrarily wrote and come run it on your machine. I mean, it could be a virus of some sort. So some of the language features that have been put into Java are specifically to eliminate that kind of thing. And that's why there's no pointer arithmetic. There's great care in the language not to give you any constructs that allow you to go outside of the memory space that your program is supposed to have. I mean, most viruses work by getting into the memory of the operating system or some other program where it's not supposed to be. So they've been very secure about that. And so far, for bytecodes that are in this general form, as far as I know, there haven't been any viruses or Trojan horses written. There is the problem that you can write a Java applet that will consume so much CPU on the browser machine that it sort of takes over the machine. So people can write applets like that, but so far nobody has written an applet that I know of that's gone to an arbitrary browser and like erased files on the disk or something really nasty. So the other part of the security, of course, is that the bytecodes are sent across the Internet, which is not exactly your secure medium. So there's the question about whether they've been tampered with. And so that part is also addressed by doing some encoding, and the interpreter has to verify at the other end that the bytecode has not been tampered with. Now, another property that was claimed by the designers of Java is that it would be high performance. And so far, this is one of the properties that has had the least success. Initially, it was about 100 times slower than C running on your browser machine. But there have been some improvements. I think there's a lot of possibility with some of these just-in-time interpreters, so that if you have code that's doing something that's compute-intensive, it's quite likely to have a loop. And the first time through, the interpreter will generate code and save it, so that as you go around the loop, you will have compiled code instead of interpreted code. The other concept that was around to make Java run faster is to allow, in some cases, when you really wanted to have a fast applet, for the compiler to generate machine code, which would be shipped to the browser. But, of course, that raises all sorts of security issues. And so far, there aren't general browsers that allow. That was called native bytecode. And so far, general browsers don't allow that. Another nice feature of the Java language design is that it has threads built in, so it's easy to write multi-threaded applications, having more than one flow of control to deal with events. And we'll be talking about that more later. Okay, so that's the end of the introductory section. I'm going to go to the next section, section 2, and start talking about the language. This is the second part in which we'll talk about, start talking about the actual syntax of the language, how to write some applets, and some of the object-oriented concepts. Then next time we'll start talking about doing some of the windowing type of things, and then we'll finish up with doing some network-type programming. Here are some URLs for some online resources. I think that these are also linked into the class webpage, but you might want to check out directly the website that's at www.javasoft.com to see what is the collection of software that Sun has there. Another interesting site to check out to look at examples is www.gamelon.com, where they've collected hundreds and thousands of Java examples. So now let's talk a little more detail about the practical side of writing a Java program. And first of all, Java programs come in sort of two forms. We talked about Java is a general purpose language. It can also be used to write interfaces to web pages. And those two forms are slightly different. You write your programs a little bit differently for those two purposes. So the first kind, the general purpose kind, is called a Java application. These are programs that are meant to be standalone programs, like you would normally write a program in C or C++ or Fortran or whatever. You write the entire program, you would compile it, and then run it on your machine. So how you compile these programs